Welcome to the Seven Figure Practice with Gerda Muller, clinical psychologist and leading private practice success business coach and mentor to allied health professionals.
Well, good afternoon, private practice success community. It's Gerda here, of course, and coming to you for our 90-day vlog challenge. And I had to not only double check, but triple check to see that today is actually vlog number 47. Can you believe it? Fabulous. What I want to do before I start with today's very interesting topic, being restraint of trade clauses. Every business owner out there can relate to this topic. I just want to share this in my groups because there's a lot of practice owners and clinicians out there that needs to hear this. Okay, so let me put that in my masterclass graduate group first. Hi Anna, hi Monique, thanks for joining me ladies. I am just sharing this live stream in our groups because it is a very important topic that people often get wrong, actually. So I want to make sure that it's in here. There we go. As you can see, I've got my warm jumper on this afternoon. It's been a very drizzly and raining day here in Brisbane. Feels like it could almost start to get autumn and then winter, but we'll have to see how we go. Alrighty, so I've shared it in that one. One more group to go, guys. I hope you've been having a fabulous day so far. Mine has been pretty busy. School drop-off, I went for a run, and then I did back-to-back masterclass weekend workshop consults in preparation for my masterclass that is coming up during the end of May. And it's really, you know, when I spend time talking to practice owners, as I do, everybody that's coming to the masterclass weekend workshop is a practice owner. You know, there's some that has a very small practice at this stage and they want to grow it. And then there's others that already have 9, 10, 11, 12 clinicians on their team, but they've reached that income glass ceiling that they want to smash through and they're coming to learn how to do that. And of course, the topic always comes up around best ways to engage clinicians, whether that is employing them, whether that's through subcontracting agreements, all of that type of stuff. And that is what made me think about this topic of discussion today, because obviously it comes in a lot. And restraint of trade clauses is something that will come up when a practice owner engages a subcontractor and a subcontractor decides to go and obviously work with a group private practice. So I can speak probably, hi Daniel, thanks for joining. I can probably speak for the next hour about the restraint of trade clause, but I'm really going to try and make it just very clear in terms of how it works. Of course, based on my understanding of it and based on how my advisors have advised me on it. So the first thing I want to say to both practice owners and to clinicians out there is do not be surprised that there is a restraint of trade clause in a contract that you're going to sign with a business. Okay, just because we are psychologists, OTs, speeches, or whatever type of allied health professional you are, doesn't mean that we're not going to be running our practices as a business. Not only can we actually have a responsibility to do it, because if we don't, we're going to have to close our practice doors, whether it's in 6 months or 6 years' time, and nobody's going to benefit from that. So if you're going to subcontract, or if you as a practice owner want to have a really robust agreement with your subcontractor, you have to ensure that there is a restraint of trade clause in there. Very, very important. What I will say is that restraint of trade clauses only applies to subcontractors. Okay, So let's say if I have a subcontractor at my private practice and they've signed a restraint of trade clause and they resign, and tomorrow they can basically go and work for the practice just located next door to us as an employee. Okay, that's where it comes in. So we cannot stop someone as a business from earning a living. You know, everybody's got family, you've got mouths to feed, you've got bills to pay. So it only applies if that subcontractor leaves to start their own business or goes and subcontracts on their ABN, because that is still running their business. So the number of people watching your video is increasing. 10 people are watching this video. I thought this might be an interesting discussion because I often don't have a lot of people on live, and I always assume it's because you guys are busy working and not on Facebook because you are so diligent, but I'm very happy to have you here. Yes, so very important, restraint of trade. A subcontractor can leave you, go and work next door, but they have to be employed, being paid as an employee and the perks that comes with it. What they can't do is leave you and go and work as a subcontractor or go and work or start their own private practice. Hi, hello, thanks for joining. So that's very important to know. All right, that's the second point. Third point is that a restraint of trade clause has to be reasonable according to the law. If it's not reasonable, it will not stand up in a court of law. So, subcontractors and clinicians out there, and I know this happens because people have told me this. I have spoken to clinicians that has subcontracted for practice owners where they have been asked to sign a restraint of trade clause that basically says that you cannot work or operate or start your own practice within 30 kilometers from this practice location for the next 2 years. Guess what, guys? That is an unreasonable restraint of trade clause. It won't be held up in a court of law. And when I tell that to that clinician, they go, what, really? And they were so scared to do the wrong thing. I mean, I strongly believe, and this is where I can really start to go off on a tangent, because this is my values coming into this thing, whereas this is not really a values discussion, this is legal stuff. But my values just always seem to come in here, where I go, if you've signed a contract and you've agreed to it, you need to stick to it. And it's my job, if I'm signing a contract, and it's your job, if you're signing a contract, to do your due diligence. Okay, so I'm very much a person of my word, so I will get very annoyed when people renege on an agreement. Okay, and then come up with 100 excuses of why they now allow to do it all of a sudden, which to me, that's the unethical thing. But yes, it will be also unethical to have an unreasonable restraint clause. So if you as a clinician, so I'm speaking to the clinicians out there that's subcontracting, if you want to join a practice and they have that type of restraint of trade clause, you know, that's a red flag. You don't want to go there. Discuss it with the practice owner, see how open they are to amending that, and if they're not, then I will probably encourage you to stay away, all right? Because that is really a very unreasonable restraint of trade clause. So what is reasonable then? So what I can tell you for me, based on where my practice is, my practice located out in the suburbs, on the south side of Brisbane. So for us, what is a reasonable restraint of trade clause is 15 kilometer radius for a period of no longer than 6 months. Okay, that's reasonable. That is reasonable. If you go closer into the city CBD, in other words, where the population density is higher, a reasonable restraint of trade clause might be 5 to 8 kilometers. So it will be smaller. 6 months is still reasonable. So the period of 6 months is the reasonable period in terms of time, and in terms of distance, it really depends on the population density, and that's where you need to speak to a professional, whether a lawyer or an HR expert, that's going to tell you based on where you are located, what is considered reasonable. So for us, where both of my practices are, that is 15 kilometers, and I'm happy with that. All right, so I guess, I don't know, was that point three or four? Probably four, but so it has to be reasonable. All right, very, very important. Let me just check and see if there was any questions. Do any of you have any questions on this topic? I'm more than happy to answer it. I do have a cottage pie in the oven though, so I don't have a lot of time because if that burns on, I won't be very happy. If it burns, that's dinner for tonight. I've got three hungry kids, but please put it in here and let me know if you've got any questions on that. So I guess the recap, expect a restraint of trade clause in there. You know, make sure that it is reasonable. Don't sign anything that you don't think is reasonable, and really do your research and your due diligence around it, because really you want to look after your reputation, whether you're a practice owner in the first instance. You don't want to be known as that unreasonable dictator that's told somebody that they can't start their own practice for the next 2 years in a 30k radius from your practice. That's really a scarcity mindset, you know, and you can't be happy when you have that type of mindset. You know, there's enough work for everyone, but there still needs to be that respect in that restraint of trade, the respect that a clinician or a subcontractor needs to have for the practice owner in terms of how hard they've worked to build up their practice, to do their marketing, and for them as a business still having to look after the whole other team of people that's working for them. People always, not always, but often project their feelings towards the practice owner, but the practice owner doesn't only look after him or herself. All right, that restraint of trade clause is about protecting the business, because that business employs maybe four admin people. It employs maybe a team of 8 or 6 or 10 or how any many clinicians. And as the business and practice owner, I need to look after the interests of that team as well. All right, and that's where restraint of trade comes in, especially from a small business perspective. And you know what? And this is not the legal side of it, but just as a person, I think it would be pretty rude to go and work for someone, learn everything that they're teaching you and stuff that they share with you, and then go set up shop down the road. Just plain rude, and you know, that's going to impact on your reputation, and you don't want that to happen. All right, so it really goes both ways here. Both parties need to be reasonable. And you know, if you are a subcontractor and you have thoughts of starting your own practice in this local area, discuss it with the practice owner. You know, if you guys go into that agreement and you know what the plans are, it's so much better. That's probably my last point. Never be sneaky about this type of stuff. I can't overemphasize how important open communication is. As a practice owner, I would be way more flexible with someone that's open and says, "Well, good, I actually live in this area. I would want to start my practice maybe in 3-4 years time down the road, you know, and this restraint of trade clause is not looking, you know, so welcome." You know, I must say I rarely change my clauses in my contract, because I want to treat all my subcontractors similarly. But I might not change that clause, but at least we've had that verbal conversation. I know where you're coming from, you know where I'm coming from, and I will tell you that when the time comes, let's talk about this again and see where we're at and what's happening. Okay, let's see. Monique says, "I employ casuals. What's allowed in regards to them starting a new clinic of their own after leaving my clinic?" Good question. When I started working and I had my first job here in Australia, I was employed, and I actually had a restraint of trade clause as an employee. All right. I'm not 100% sure as whether that still stands for employees today, because that was more than 10 years ago. I would think that would be very rude of them to do that, just from that personal interaction. part, but what I might do is I'm happy to manipulate with you and my groups. I'll ask my HR person, because when it comes to stuff like that, I will only give you an answer if I'm like 100% sure, and if I'm not, I will tell you as well. So I'm not 100%, but I will ask Claire and I will let you know. Monique says, does it apply to employees as well as contractors? Rachel says, is 12 months reasonable? Rachel, from the input that I've received, it has to be 6 months. Okay, I would love for it to be 12 months, but and most of the times it's six. Rachel says, I have 4 kilometers for 12 months. Yes, my lovely.
Can you cut off the watermelon?
I will come do that in 5 minutes. Is that okay? Okay, I'm just finishing up here.
Can I eat one piece?
I will come cut it up for you, my lovely, okay?
Can I cut it up with not a sharp knife?
Not with a sharp knife,
I meant with a normal knife.
Okay, ask your sister to help you, okay?
She never does that.
I'll be there in 2 minutes.
Okay, I'll do it then.
My six-year-old is in need of watermelon. Rachel, I would...
Or she too.
No. Don't do that, lovely.
I have no bullet. Sure.
Bit tired after a day of school. 4 kilometers, 4 kilometers is a very short distance, Rachel. So it's really about what is the population density in terms of where your practice is located. I would think that the 4 is probably too little and the 12 is too much. And that's really a question that you need to ask of somebody to really look specifically at where you're located and make sure that based on your location that is reasonable. Okay, tell her I'm on my way. Okay, let's say goodbye to the people here. Do you want to come say goodbye? Seeing that you've now been part of it, but very nicely. There we go. So we're signing off for today. Beware the Nerf gun. Yes. So after we had this very serious discussion over restraint of trade, we're signing it off with a six-year-old. Have a fabulous day, everyone, and I'll speak to you again soon. Bye.